It's time for Show Me the Franchise.
With Thomas and Frederick. With Thomas and Frederick.
It's time for Show Me the Franchise.
With Thomas and Frederick. With Thomas and Frederick.
Welcome to Show Me the Franchise, the podcast that talks about franchises of all shapes, sizes, backgrounds, genres, and types. I'm one of your hosts, Tom Stadler, here as usual with a mean one, a foul one, Mr. Fred Dakin.
No, no, no.
It's a Grinch ho, ho, ho. It's no, 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 because he doesn't like the holiday.
Oh, I got it now. Okay, I didn't connect the webs here.
all the webs lead to Madam Web, whatever.
Her web connects us all.
Yeah, her web connects us all.
We're in the Dr. Seuss expanded universe today. No, Fred, you are not a mean one, nor are you a vile one or anything like that.
I'm no Grinch around the holidays.
Oh, in fact, you are the very opposite. If anything, you're like Clark Griswold. Like
I'm kind of like a Who.
Oh, maybe. Bahu Doris?
Yeah. Right?
And, of course, we are talking today about the classic Dr. Seuss story, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. If you were here expecting to hear about Coca-Cola, that episode is coming. We were not kidding. We will be doing an episode on Coke. But for today, we decided we wanted to do a little something special for the holidays.
Is that episode recorded?
I can neither confirm nor deny if that's true.
Whether it's in a place or not?
I would say it's safe to say that we're extremely confident that the next one will be Coca-Cola on our main feed.
I just really wanted you to say it was in the can.
Fred, the Coca-Cola episode is in the can. But we're coming to you not too long before the holidays here. In fact, we're right in the midst of the holiday season as we speak, talking about Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Fred, what is your history with the Grinch?
Well, I think it has come up many times that I'm a Christmas person. Also, I'm a movie person. I think I mentioned my giant chest of VHSs growing up, that's all I watched. We didn't really watch TV. I just had this big chest of children's movies.
Oh, yeah.
But I did have one little container that I could pull out at a special time of the year that had a few choice VHSs.
Ooh.
I think I had like Prancer, which is an interesting movie. You ever watch Prancer?
Yes.
It's got the most annoying little girl in it.
Yeah.
And Sam Elliott.
Is Sam Elliott
the mustache guy, right?
I mean,
oh yeah, not Chris. I was wondering if I was getting mixed up with Chris Elliott.
I mean, Chris Elliott is in there. That's a very different movie. No, it was definitely Sam Elliott making Prancer. And Cloris Leachman in this?
Yeah, it's an interesting movie, but the main girl is pretty insufferable. Not her fault. She's a young actress, but they just have her yelling her lines the whole time. But anyway, I had Prancer. I had The Bear Who Slept Through Christmas. I had The Year Without a Santa Claus, and I had the animated How the Grinch Stole Christmas, little animated short. I think it came with that and like an old Rudolph animated, not the claymation, but there is like old 60s animated Rudolph.
Sure.
And I remember kind of having this VHS, and that was just, it got put on at Christmas time. It was Christmas time, you throw it in, we watch it. You forget how short it is.
It's very short. Mm-hmm. I had somebody the other day, it may have even been you, Fred. I was like, how long is this, the remake of... the new animated Grinch movie. And I was like, this had better be not even like double the length. And it's almost like triple the length of the original.
Well, it just says how short the original one, because I do believe the new one is like a tight hour 20 with credits.
Yes, it is. It's a short movie, but you really do forget how short the original 1966 animated feature was, which, yeah, I mean, is a now holiday classic. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the inspiration for the Ocean's movies, too. We need one more gift. We get one more gift. Except it's just him and a dog that he's mean to.
This is making me feel very sad that we did not get George Clooney or Brad Pitt as the Grinch in that Jim Carrey version.
Oh, they were busy doing Wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, the classic story, George Clooney was supposed to be Jack Frost. It looks like him. It's designed after him, and then he backed out of it.
The one with
Michael Keaton.
Oh my God.
If you take the time later tonight, look at the face of the Jack Frost, and he's got the look of our guy.
He's got the look of our guy. I like it. Okay.
Yeah, look, he's doing the George Clooney little like smirk.
But he's like looking down and doing his thing. I remember listening to an interview about that recently, or somebody on a podcast was talking about Clooney and how he looks down all the time and like how people would get so annoyed with him. They're like, you're never going to be a famous actor if you're doing that.
Well, I know Spielberg said like on the set of, he like did an ER episode, I think. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, you'd be a great actor if you would stop moving your fucking head so much.
Oh, that's probably it.
But he does do the look down and squint. Because I remember they did a whole American Dad episode, which was actually really funny about George Clooney. Because I remember the main character, whatever his name is, called him Cloontang. And I thought that was the funniest thing ever.
That's a very Fred joke right there.
You're hanging with Cloontang?
Oh my God, what a bunch of nonsense. Back to the Grinch though. So this was on every Christmas,
yeah, pop in that VHS, watch the Grinch, enjoy it. This is kind of just like it's kind of like a special edition music video, like if a band comes out with like a 20-minute music video, that's kind of what it is. There's a little preamble and then you get like an extended long song of the Grinch.
Yeah, I suppose so. Plus with music included in that movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it is such a holiday classic now, right? I mean, obviously it was on in my home growing up too. Watched it all the time. It was like that, Charlie Brown Christmas, Rudolph. But yeah, I don't know. The Grinch just always kind of felt like, I don't know, not dangerous. Like it's never, you never got that feeling of danger as a kid, but you did always kind of get the feeling of like, ooh, he's not a good person. Like, why is he doing this?
It's shady. He's shady.
Yeah. I know. I'm loving like all like the memes recently. I'd be like, man, this song drags the hell out of the Grinch. Just endless owns like all throughout it.
Mm-hmm. I'm more of a fan of the Tyler, the Creator version of the song, but.
Wait, he has his own version?
Yeah, it was in the Grinch movie that you watched, apparently.
Oh, that was Tyler, the Creator in there. Okay. Oh, well, I mean, we'll talk a little bit about that version today. The Grinch, yes. So, I mean, for those who are not familiar with How the Grinch Stole Christmas, it is about an angry, loathsome loner, green fellow named the Grinch, who... is very jealous of all the who's down in Whoville. Is he jealous or just maybe like, I don't know.
He's just annoyed with all their cheeriness and they're loud. He's up there on his mountain and they're singing. Their lights are super bright. He can't sleep when he wants to.
Yeah, I mean, he's essentially Dr. Seuss's version of Ebenezer Scrooge, right?
Yes.
Like, I mean, that's the most like, easy metaphor you can make, to the point where I feel like, when people are like Christmas haters, you're either a Scrooge or you're a Grinch, right? Like,
right. Yeah. Don't be such a Grinch.
Yeah. Maybe it depends on your tax bracket that you're in, whether you're one or the other. Because the Grinch is not a very affluent fellow, whereas you can tell Scrooge has got some
stuff. Squatter of the mountains.
Yeah. He's got a whole room filled with gold coins that he jumps into and swims in.
That's Scrooge McDuck.
I know. McDuck. I know it is, but it's very funny that, I don't know, that character even persevered from what, just like being in A Christmas Story. But yeah, I mean, the Grinch is very, I think you're hard pressed to find people who are at least vaguely familiar with the Grinch, just through osmosis of pop culture or whatever, right? But I mean, it was once upon a time just a short story that Dr. Seuss wrote. But I guess, why do you think the Grinch has persevered over these years, Fred?
I think because anytime you can take, well, first of all, just the whole Dr. Seuss thing is popular and it's cool thing he's doing, Green Eggs and Ham. Mm-hmm. You're taking that style and then you're taking a holiday combining those two things. And the story actually, even though like from interviews that I read with Dr. Seuss, doesn't seem like a big Christmas guy, it kind of is interesting how well the themes and like what the story is about falls into what people ascribe to what Christmas is about.
Sure.
So I think it's just kind of that meeting of the Seussdom and the holidays, and actually just kind of like a well-crafted short story.
I really love the word Seussdom.
Yeah.
It's not a word I'm well familiar with.
When you got to go to Universal Studios and see these freaks out here. These people who love and dress like who's.
Let me tell you this, Fred. I was at Universal Studios very shortly after The Grinch came out.
No.
Back in 2000, 2001, we managed to go down to Universal Studios when they the first time they ever redid the park. With like the little like Whoville and stuff, and it had a Grinch character walking around. It was pretty crazy. Because, yeah, I was like, wow, I didn't know theme parks could be like this outside of Disney World.
But mm-hmm.
I dug it. I was like, and then they had Marvel Superhero Land before it became so over saturated in the public discourse and everything. But it was, it's an adventure. So you've been down there when they've done like all the Whoville and stuff?
Well, I was there December 1st, and I'm just more talking about the people showing up at the park.
Oh.
So many of them dressed in like Grinch and Who stuff. Like, it is a fandom. When I say a Seussdom, there are people that go hard for the Grinch. I was at a craft store, and I overheard someone just looking for the Grinch aisle. And I was like, there is not a Grinch aisle. There was a Grinch aisle at Michael's or wherever we were. Like, people love it. I don't know if it's just like the look of the Grinch. I think it does kind of have this very almost like 70s throwback, like kitschy, corny look to it.
Yeah.
But I think people really grasp onto that. I don't think people are grasping onto it because they're anti-Christmas. It's because they're Christmas freaks.
Yeah. That's very
true. Which is interesting.
Well, I'm even like kind of surprised too, because like when you said, "Oh yeah, people dressed up like it," I'm like, "Yeah, I've seen the paid actors or the theme park, you know, performers dressed up like the Who's," but people going out of their way to dress up like that themselves.
Yeah, not just people dressing like the Grinch, people dressing like the way the Who's dress in the movies.
Yeah, which like, I think that Jim Carrey version did kind of repackage everything for a whole new generation, and now it is a little more digestible. People are like, oh, that's how you can dress like them, right? Like,
right.
Yeah, which almost started the Seuss expanded universe there, but that Cat in the Hat movie didn't hit it.
Yeah, I was as a young boy very hopeful for that, especially you're bringing in the other guy.
Because
when you're that age, it's Mike Myers and Jim Carrey, and Adam Sandler. Those are like the three guys. And yeah. Like, what do you got for me? They should have each done a successful one.
They should have done that Adam Sandler, Green Eggs and Ham.
I don't want Green Eggs and Ham.
I don't want the Green Eggs and
Ham. Although they did do the Lorax with Danny DeVito, which is pretty like, pretty perfect.
Yeah, but that was computer animated, like this new one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you got me to watch a movie with Danny DeVito looking like the Lorax, like with the practical makeup.
I got to take care of these goddamn trees.
You guys are hurting the environment. I did have some affection, though, for that Jim Carrey version of the Grinch, and recently watched the Benedict Cumberbatch version. We'll get into that. I have nothing against it. There are things that I was like, I don't know about, and we'll talk about it. I don't know that I'll ever need to revisit it, but I probably will have to if I ever plan on having a family. So
yep.
it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. I'll keep trying to throw on the old one, though.
Yeah, it's kind of, we won't get into it now, but it's passable enough to be the next generation's Grinch, which is upsetting.
That's a little too bad. Let's talk a little bit about the Grinch history. It's not super long. There's not a ton of details out there, so you guys hang with me for a moment. The Grinch first appeared in a 33-line illustrated poem by Dr. Seuss called The Hubbub and the Grinch, which was originally published in May 1955 in an edition of the Red Book magazine was the name of it. Dr. Seuss published a lot of short stories in there, or a lot of his original stories. Seuss began work on How the Grinch Stole Christmas just a couple of years later, around the beginning of 1957. He claimed himself that he was the inspiration for the character, as Fred so eloquently put before, as his wife's health problems at the time and his dismay with the commercialization of Christmas made him feel very Grinchish. He claims he looked at himself in the mirror and was like, I felt like I looked like a Grinch, whichever that means.
Yeah, Dr. Seuss always gave me, I loved him as a kid, but always gave me the vibe of like not the chillest guy.
No. And I think there's even been a lot of like stuff that's happened since then where his personal life sounds like he was not a great dude. Seuss wrote the book quickly and was mostly finished with it within a few weeks. He had started writing it, just like earlier that year and then just crushed it by May of 1957. Biographers Judith and Neil Morgan wrote that it was one of his easiest books of his career to write, except for its conclusion. So according to Dr. Seuss himself, I got hung up getting the Grinch out of the mess. I got into a situation where I sounded like a second-rate preacher or some biblical truism. Finally, in desperation, without making any statement whatever, I showed the Grinch and the Who's together at the table, and I made a pun with the Grinch carving the roast beast. I had gone through thousands of religious choices, and then after 3 months, it came out like that. So, sounds like he wasn't totally sold on his ending of like Grinch learned the meaning of Christmas or how to love his neighbor or anything like that.
He's like, it's all still bullshit, but I needed a good ending.
Yeah. So, yeah, I finished it by May 1957, and then it debuted in December of that year. Both a book version that was published by Random House and in an issue of that Red Book magazine again. Chuck Jones and Ben Washam adapted the story as an animated television special just 9 years later in 1966, which featured narration by Boris Karloff of the Frankenstein fame and The Mummy. I mean, he's in both. He's good. Who also provided the Grinch's voice in the movie. There is a, oh wait, I don't want to get into that yet. There, of course, the famous song in the movie is You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch, which the lyrics were written by Dr. Seuss, but performed by Thurl Ravenscroft.
What a name.
I know. I'm like, these people don't sound real. Seuss, Ravenscroft. I don't know. Do Fred Dakin and Tom Stadler sound like real names?
No.
Stuff we just made up. I wanted to get to this, though, too. Apparently, there was a prequel that was made then about a decade later called Halloween is Grinch Night.
A prequel?
A prequel.
10 years later?
Yeah. Well, okay. In real life, 1977, 10 years after the TV special came out, they made another TV special called Halloween is Grinch Night, which
what?
A prequel to How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Is he like, well, this I can get into.
Of course, Boris Karloff was... passed away at that time. So Hans Conried was the voice of the Grinch and the narrator.
Should have gotten like Bela Lugosi or something.
Oh my God. Wouldn't that have been something?
You gotta just keep the monster classics people going.
I mean, Bela Lugosi was even alive at that time.
Right. He passed away. Probably not still alive.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen any Grinch animated spinoffs or prequels.
There's a lot of Grinch. I'll say this. I mean, obviously the reception to the original TV special was pretty pretty big at the time, and I think a lot of people just it's so funny though, because a lot of people could just sort of anecdotally say, oh yeah, you know, people loved it. And it's sort of like, I think the reason that a lot of these things became popular, and there's the whole story about It's a Wonderful Life, was not critically well reviewed when it came out, but it became such a staple of being on TV because some network bought it for cheap and they would just play it every Christmas to the point where people would see it. And they're like, wait, this movie's really good. Like, why aren't we talking about this? And then it's just on all the time every year. And so people just thought of it as like, it's a holiday classic
now. Right.
So then in 2000, the book was adapted into a live action film directed by Ron Howard and starring Jim Carrey as the Grinch. Movie was a pretty big commercial success, as we talked about. A lot of people really took to it. I mentioned Universal Studios decorated themselves up for the Wholand.
I saw it in theaters twice.
You did?
Yes.
How did you like the movie?
I was blown away by it. I was so in the pocket for. I remember when there was talks of the Grinch movie, there was even like an early teaser where they didn't really show him.
Oh, really?
I remember being a little freaked out that it was going to be a little scary. Because the idea, I remember the first teaser poster going to my movie theater
right.
was literally the Grinch hand holding a broken ornament like yeah. that. And I was like, that's kind of eerie and creepy. And the idea, without seeing Jim Carrey's performance, of a live-action Grinch walking around, talking, kind of scared me, I remember. But then I remember seeing Remember the Titans, and they played the full-on trailer for it. And I remember being like, oh, I wish we were seeing this movie instead. I loved Remember the Titans when I saw it. Mm-hmm. But as like a 10-year-old, I was like, we're seeing this movie with real people and like the Grinch is coming out soon. What are we doing? And then, but that was the first time I saw Denzel cook, though.
Oh, so, yeah. And he's good.
And he cooks, indeed.
He does cook.
Yeah, it was huge for me. And then I remember we were doing like a family movie night and everyone wanted to see What Women Want with Mel Gibson. And I was deemed a little too young to see that. So I took my mom to see The Grinch again. And I had a great time. I remember when it came out on VHS, I was like, yes, please. I want it. Please, please, please. And I got it. I watched it right away in like early November. So I was obsessed with this movie.
Oh, yeah. I do remember getting The Grinch early before Christmas and watching it a lot. And I remember we did see it in theaters, too. And yeah, I think loved it at the time. I think everybody, critics loved it, too. It was pretty well received. I mean, not like overwhelming, like, oh, this is a modern masterpiece. But I think people were like, yeah, if you're going to adapt.
It's functional. It works. And it's kind of gotten like I revisit it and it kind of works less and less for me. And I see it as not as good like as a film, as a movie. Mm-hmm. But it still has a super special place for me because I think Jim Carrey is phenomenal in it, considering what he's wearing, what he's doing, and what he's emoting.
Yeah, and also I think the trauma he had to go through for himself. Apparently, he said he got super claustrophobic with all that makeup on.
They had like a Navy SEALs person who like dealt with people who like dealt with trauma in like warfare, talking him through stuff. Or it was like a CIA guy or something like that.
It was something like that. It was crazy. So, I mean, critically, it was well-received. Budget-wise, or I should say the money it made was a smash. It was had a budget of $123 million, which is... That's hefty for 2000. Like, that's a pretty big-ass production. It ended up making, between just domestic, $261 million. Worldwide, it made $350 million. So, yeah, they were definitely like... When are we making the next Seuss movie? We got to get that Cat in the Hat going.
Put that cat in a hat.
And we got ourselves a movie.
Give me Austin Powers.
It is something. I think there is something to the fact that it is practical makeup. It's practical effects for the most part.
Very little just background touches of characters for CGI.
Right. And it's just seeing those characters kind of come to life and like with like the weird like upward tilted noses. Yeah. The coo or the Dr. Seuss noses. Right. And I don't know. I think there was something I enjoy the movie getting into the story. And I think this is kind of setting up for my Benedict Cumberbatch story take. But if you're going to make a feature length film about the Grinch, it's sort of like, right. The original is like 25 minutes long. How do you fill in another hour?
The juiciest stuff is bad Grinch going to Whoville and interacting with Whos. I think that they do it really successful in the Jim Carrey one because they're telling you have that great Anthony Hopkins voiceover coming hot off of the Hannibal movie.
Right.
Just doing his voice like this.
Mm-hmm.
A snowflake like the one on your sleeve. And I think that is where most of the juice comes when you're trying to tell that story. And then it's the backstory, which I think they also do pretty well. I remember not many dry eyes in the theater during the Jim Carrey version when you kind of see the story of this young boy getting picked on by Jeffrey Tambor because he's green. He tries to shave his face. And like the thing is, all the girls are like Grinch hot. And like that's the thing, that's how school is, like, mm-hmm. You know, people are attracted to you and it's the bullies who make you feel ugly, that ruin your life.
Yeah.
And I just felt that, you know, like, you know, not that I've always been, you know, pretty happy, but I just like seeing that, I thought, I was like, oh, that's what happens to people. And it was very, I think the young act, I think it's a little person they have play the young Grinch, mm-hmm. is really good.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, they do such a great job with that backstory. And I think that is the one reason that movie works for me, to the reason you just said. It's adding in, why does the Grinch really hate Christmas? Because you obviously get it now, right? You know, it's like when you watch the cartoon special over and over again, you're just like, yep, this guy hates Christmas. He's alone. It's like these people have kind of, you don't never get out and out like they've like cast him out or anything, or he's felt ostracized. But there's sort of that implied feeling that that's sort of what's there. And then it's in this movie, you kind of see it come to life, which I think kind of started that whole trend of like, well, what's the real backstory of this character? Like, why is so-and-so like this? And I felt like we got a lot of bad versions of that after this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you do when you're trying to ask the question of, like, why would somebody, like, go to such lengths to ruin Christmas for an entire village, right? It's like, yeah, you need to, like, really establish that he's traumatized. And, yeah, I mean, having been picked on as a kid, I get it. Like, and it's like, you do feel vengeful. Mm-hmm.
And I love about the Jim Carrey one that he's innately a little fucker too.
Yeah.
Like, he's still not a bad person at that point, or like a bad dude, but like he always kind of has that mischievous. And I think that's a very cool character trait to ascribe to a young Grinch when you want him to be on his side. I like the idea that he's kind of a little asshole, but it's endearing when he's little.
Right.
Like, I remember the scene where it's the storks are dropping off the carriages and they're floating, mm-hmm. and he bumps into another kid's, and like you hear this little laugh. Like, I don't know why. Like, it made me think of like good old Tim Burton or something like that. Like, yeah. The beginning of Batman Returns or something.
Yeah, yeah. More Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Jim Carrey, though, even as an adult, he's kind of endearing. And I think because he has that sort of innate, like, I don't know, vibe to him of like, you sort of like Jim Carrey no matter how much of an asshole he is. Like, I think that's why he's always struggled to play a villainous character or like a darker character. Like, I don't know if you ever seen like the Number 23 or anything like that.
Or there was one called like Dark Crimes.
Yeah. And how phenomenally it like doesn't work, because whether or not he wants it that way, I don't think he can play bad very seriously.
He can be sad, depressed, milquetoast. And that's good, and he can be high energy Carrie, but I don't know about like evil.
Right.
Or not just bad or whatever you call it.
So it's like, so even in this movie, which I think it's Ron Howard's banking on, he's like, I want you to feel sympathy for the Grinch, because that's what's gonna make this movie work. Mm-hmm. Is that if you feel sympathy for him, even though he's being an absolute asshole, like, it's like you're gonna get into why this story is going to resonate. So I don't know. I know there's things that work less and less over the years on why that is, but I think there's still just something to it that it was like, if you're going to make a live action version of that movie, this is probably the best version that you're going to get of a remake.
Yeah, I think people hate on, like, there is kind of a bit of an ugly look to the production design, but I'm still in the pocket because of it being all real. Like, it looks like a physical place, like,
well, you called we get it. That it's like Burton-esque, right? Yeah,
those little props, like the little shaver and stuff, like all the little Whoville like inventions are mostly practical things,
right?
Like, I don't know, I think like they could have done something aesthetically to make it look more, I don't know, there's something about how dark that movie looks too, like there's something with the lighting or something that doesn't give it the sheen that it should have.
It's kind of you kind of see it a little bit in a lot of Ron Howard movies, though, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think about Willow, and like, right, that's Ron Howard, isn't
yes.
it? Yeah. And like, there's, I think that's almost a reason why that movie didn't resonate, too, because it had sort of like that like Jim Henson sort of like, it's like kiddie, but there's something sort of dark and sort mm-hmm. of like there's shadows to it. Like, you kind of get it in Muppet Christmas Carol. You get it. It was a very big vibe from like the 80s until like 2000. And this is maybe like the last iteration of it where, or maybe like A Series of Unfortunate Events where you get that like,
yeah,
twisted. There's something kind of sinister under the skin.
And all these are better examples than The Grinch, a movie I still like. But when I think about the Muppets Christmas Carol, it's the exact same thing you're talking about, but I think it looks good.
Yeah.
You know, like versus there is something ugly about the look of the Grinch movie.
There is. Yeah, there is that feeling that when you're watching Muppet Christmas Carol, it's like you're in London, but it is sort of feel like they have did such a good job. Of like this is obviously a set and it looks like a set, but right. It's like a good set
because we're making movies, classic movies here. You know, like they can lean into that because they're the Muppets making movies, you know.
I mean, that's the Muppet trademark. Yeah, Sesame Street is by the home right now. That's the word.
Oh God, they can move in with me.
Yeah, I was like, I will not sponsor the Sesame Street. I'll make their dreams happen.
Yeah, Stadler and Waldorf can move into the theater. Yeah, Babylon.
My great grandpa Stadler. Well, that kid never got me nothing. He can't have my name. That's why he got a D instead of a T. Ay, ay, ay.
Am I seeing a future Halloween costume for us?
Potentially.
Just go to a party and sit in the back and just roast people. Like,
right. Whoa. Were you supposed to be Statler? Well, yeah, I know that. That's who you are. I'm like, no, with a T, not a D. Mm-hmm. I've oddly have not gotten that over the years.
Well, you could just go as yourself and then correct the spelling, and then I'll go as a Waldorf salad.
Well, because you get that big old mutton chops on your face. Then. That's what's good. But so I think you had with this movie, though, kind of going back to the Grinch, is you had a kind of a reintroduction or sort of an elevation for a new generation, right? Because the 60s version, it persevered, right? It was a holiday classic already. People knew it. They loved it. Even kids at that time, I mean, being one of them, you and I both, you know, it's like we recognized the Grinch's game and it was on every Christmas. But here now you added a new like introduction to it. Now we have our own Grinch, right? And it doesn't look anything like the old one. In the aspect of not the same style. It's right. It's live action, right? It's like you're giving it, it's like watching the Flintstones like live action movie or the Brady Bunch, which I feel like keeps coming up on this podcast.
You gotta check it out.
I know. You're gonna love it. Gary Cole doing some work. Ay. I don't know why I keep saying that.
Ay. You gotta just change it to do.
I can't do a Statler and Waldorf joke. They're too good. There was though this feeling though that yeah, it was like the Grinch was sort of reinvigorated, and it's in a way that like you couldn't probably ever replicate if you tried to do like a Charlie Brown Christmas like live action adaptation.
Yeah, no one wants to see that, and it's also just seems special too because they never made a sequel, thank God.
Yeah. And it kind of came at the end of just this whole era, too, I think, of where we were making a lot of live-action versions of TV shows. I just mentioned it, right? Brady Bunch, Flintstones, Addams Family, Little Rascals. Like, it was just becoming this thing of, like, well, what if we made this TV show that people loved into this? And they're like, what about a TV special? And yeah, I don't know. I just kind of felt like it was this sort of a trademark moment of, like, Dr. Seuss was cool again.
Yes.
So. Mm-hmm. But then after that came out, so that became, you know, this whole phase. We talked about Universal Studios when they did their whole, like, Wholand, and they do it. Do they still? So you said they still do it down there?
Yeah, they still have a whole land over there. I don't know if they have way less characters walking around just in general, but it's a whole little Seuss land. We didn't spend much time there because there isn't a lot of rides or anything.
So it's year-round, though, now? It's a Seuss land?
Yeah.
Wow.
They got a little Seuss area for sure.
That's pretty crazy. But
people like, and I think from this movie onwards, it's just been embraced. The not Seuss itself. People aren't, it's Seuss, it's the Grinch and the Seuss Grinch.
Mm. Which I think makes sense because, yeah, we kind of mentioned Dr. Seuss had his own comeuppance, or not comeuppance, but you know, sort of like people kind of realizing, it's maybe not the best dude there.
See, an anti Semite.
I think there's something like that.
Because all these writers end up, like, being anti-Semites, it seems like.
Or just out and out, like, racist. Right. H.P. Lovecraft. But, I mean, these guys are also from a different era, right, where rarely was anybody on the right side of history, to the point where you're sort of like, Yeah, if Mark Twain wanted to write the N-word, it's probably for a better reason than these guys have.
No, I just don't know about the perspective of a guy sitting on top of a mountain looking at a group of people saying, God, I hate these people.
Yeah, kind of a tough hang when you retrospect when you think about that.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we're going down too bad of a rabbit hole here. But yeah, I mean, like you said, though, people are celebrating the Grinch, which I think, again, can you separate the art from the artist sometimes, too? If you're not a fan of Dr. Seuss himself, it's like, I think a lot of people have gotten good at doing that. I mean, you have Harry Potter, too, which a lot of people have to do that right now. Because unfortunately, we have the author who is alive and active, very vocally in the wrong. And I have no problem telling that she's in the wrong.
The double downer of being wrong, which is always the crazy part about her.
Yeah. And just like not even like realizing like, I might be wrong about this. It's like, maybe just stop. Grinch, though. So we had this remake, right? So it was about 35 years after the previous version. Then almost 18 years later, and I think it was actually supposed to come out in 2018, we were supposed to get the Illumination Entertainment version.
No. You said that wrong.
Oh.
Illumination.
Banana.
I've never seen any of that.
None of the Minions?
That was the most Minions I got, was the little opening roll.
You want to get into Illumination for a little bit, too?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know how many other movies are really good.
I think this is the only one I've seen. Trying to think, because what else is there other than Despicable Me and Minions?
So yeah, that's their bread and butter, Despicable Me and Minions. Some people really love those. I like the first Despicable Me. I'll get that out there. Super Mario Brothers movie, that was also Illumination.
Oh yeah.
But so they're getting into this game a little bit more, right? Of like, we're doing these animated movies. But I think it was something I was watching in this version that we're about to talk about here. So we have a Illumination animation, computer animated version of The Grinch. And with Benedict Cumberbatch as The Grinch.
And The Grinch.
As The Grinch.
Little girl.
Which is sort of itself a hilarious casting.
It's almost like I wanted you to watch it, just like you can't believe it until you like watch a whole movie, like, wow, it's Benedict Cumberbatch doing a little like I'm a little nerd voice. Yeah.
Well, like, I'm the bad guy in this one.
He does great American accents, and I always love it when he does it.
Well, it's almost like he's doing the
I'm Dr. Strange.
That's it, yeah. Dr. Strange. Dr. Strange.
Don't you understand? I'm a doctor.
Yeah. I don't have the use of my hands. We have one outcome.
Yep, that's good.
We're in the end game now. I mean, we are in the end game of this history here. Illumination Entertainment developed a 3D animated feature
Illumination
of The Grinch, directed by Yarrow Chaney and Scott Mosier.
Scott Mosier of Clerks fame.
Is that the same Mosier?
Yeah, that's if you know the guy in Clerks who's like, that's beautiful, man.
Oh my God.
And Snowball. Yeah, Snowball. But yeah, frequent like editor collaborator with Kevin Smith, who is now kind of like a big deal in the animation game for kids.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Which this movie's very much for kids. Not that any of the Grinches is a adult friendly oriented thing, but there is that feeling when you watch the Jim Carrey Grinch that Jim Carrey knows he's in a kids movie but knows that adults are watching it.
Yeah, he's gonna give a little something for daddy.
He's got a little nudge with that his elbow, right, where he'll make a little gag here or there. He'll make a little like wink
he'll nudge. Talk to the camera, be like, kids today,
yeah,
show amused by television, video games.
Yeah, he's just He's just sort of like telling like parents, I know you're in it with me. hang in here for a while. I got you. Where this felt very much so overtly a lot of the Illumination animation stuff. And it's sort of the, I don't want to call it like, you know, beat you over the head kids stuff, but it sort of feels like that. Like there's not it doesn't have a lot to say. Right. And it's a lot of action. It's a lot of things going on. Illumination is also Sing. I just realized that's
the okay. Sing, thing.
Yes.
Sing, the Sing 2 trailer is one of the best films ever made. But they should have gotten an Oscar for the Sing 2 trailer.
Yeah, which I I know. I love when they're, and Bono.
Oh, man. When that comes out and he's opening the door, he's like a big gorilla or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember, but I just remember getting like all the feels anytime I would go see a movie and be like, should I see Sing 2?
I mean, okay. Yeah. So here you go. They did do The Lorax. I'm sorry. I forgot about that. Mm-hmm. So Secret Life of Pets.
Okay.
Yeah, Super Mario Brothers movie. We got
Secret Life Pets. I remember now.
We got a Despicable Me 4 that came out this year. We got Super Mario Brothers 2 coming up in a couple of years. Minions 3 because I don't know. I think what bothers me about Illumination to some end, it's not that they're not doing good work. I think the work it's fine. It's for kids. It's very much for kids. Whereas you look at something like what Pixar or even classic Pixar is doing, right? And you see that there's a lot of real life emotion. People are bringing stuff to the work that they've experienced in real life with their children. It's things that kids will recognize because they can see it at home. But it's also parents will see it and they're like, fuck. Like, I know what it's like, you know, and I'm like, ugh, mm-hmm. I'm already getting like teary. I'm like, what's the beginning of
up? You're not even thinking of a specific movie. You're just thinking of Pixar in general. You're just like, ah.
Well, I mean, they do tell very heartfelt stories. Yeah. I mean, even the like all the Toy Stories, there's like real like trauma being experienced by these toys and the people in the movie. Right. It's like, and I think that it's just. I could see it in this Grinch movie.
I got chills thinking about Toy Story 2.
Oh, Is that the best Toy Story still?
Oh, by far.
Oh, huh?
I think about when that song, when you get to hear Jessie's backstory and hear the whole story about her getting deserted and stuff. I think that's just the bee's knees. It makes me so full of sadness and just, I love it.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's a very heartfelt story. I have not seen Toy Story 2 since the theaters, and I haven't changed that. I don't know why. I know it's going to be good. I played the hell out of the video.
Frasier Crane as Stinky Pete.
Obviously, his best role. Oh, my God. I had I'll go off on a quick tangent here. We're adding more tangents, I feel like, in this like new like revitalized version of Show Me the Franchise. But there was like a prompt today that was going around on social. It was like, who is the most like successful majority TV actor? And someone was like, I know everybody wants to say Kelsey Grammer, but they're like, it's got to be somebody who is in more than one show, like, or played more than one character. And like, he's really only known for Frasier for the most part, right?
Yeah. Or Sideshow Bob.
I mean, that's
Sideshow Bill.
Bob,
yeah.
But I mean, that's really his only other like. Who's his other notable TV character? Does he have one?
No, just Stinky Pete.
Yeah,
Toy Story 2. Down Periscope.
But yeah, because people were like, I think it's Ted Danson or Julia Louise Dreyfus, and I'm like, well, I mean, Henry Winkler has a stay in that now too, and maybe Betty White.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of you have to decide what you're measuring by to make that choice. But yeah, I think so.
Yeah. It was just, but it just got made me think of it though, too. Because somebody who was a TV actor who I think now is more known as movie actor is Benedict Cumberbatch.
Correct. Yeah. He brought a full circle.
Yep. So, I mean, because everyone knew him on Sherlock. And I thought he was on something else too.
A TV show?
Yeah.
I know he would just be in like small British, like six episode things, like leading up. I saw a lot of like when they were putting that on Netflix.
Oh, like his other projects that he had done for like BBC or something.
Yeah. Like he was around as kind of like a BBC guy. Like, and they would do, there was the live recording of him and who's the other, Johnny Lee Miller. They would do the Frankenstein live, and then they'd switch roles halfway through or something like that.
Wait, Johnny Lee Miller? Like the guy
who... Trainspotting.
Yeah, who... he ended up playing Sherlock himself, too, right? Like an American version of Elementary? Yep.
Not a bad show, either.
No, I never watched Elementary, but I did watch...
Sherlock was one of my favorite shows, and then the last season was kind of the most disappointing TV series. Like, that's the most disappointing season of a television show in my whole life.
I really don't know. Yeah, if I was trying to think of another TV show, it's probably just Sherlock, because Sherlock went on for so long. I don't remember. I think I watched the season. I don't even know. Maybe like the one where they were supposedly teasing like Andrew Scott coming back.
And, mm-hmm.
and I was like, that's kind of lame.
Yeah. And then like he would pop up in just like movies with Brits at that time. Like he'd be like the sixth character and like, what's Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy or something
like that. Yeah. Or Atonement or something like that. Mm-hmm. Right. Something like that. I think he's in Atonement or the other Boleyn girl he's in. And so, I mean, yeah, he's extremely British. I mean, there's no
played Schmaug.
There's no two ways about it. Yeah, that's right. With Martin Freeman, who's his Sherlock cohort, which, man, we can get a, well, we already talked about that in our Hobbit episode with CJ. And that was quite an adventure. Because I think it had similar vibes in terms of this one and the way I kind of approached it. It was like, this has some Hobbit vibes. I'm like, I recognize the level of the production. I thought everyone was fine in their role. I thought there was some heartfelt feeling at the end of the movie. I know there's someone you want to shout out in the movie. There's a part.
I'll say that for our power rankings.
Oh, right. That's fair. But I don't know. What were your thoughts on this movie? I've been talking enough.
No, I was just going to say I came into it. I actually saw this movie at a real estate event. Like my wife.
Oh,
she has some friends that she used to work with who are now realtors. And they kind of will throw an event like they rent out a theater, have old clients, prospective clients come in. They can watch a movie for free with their kids. So I saw this in theaters for free, like early, like the 5th of November. Like I'm not even thinking about Christmas yet. And I thought it was going to be complete garbage. I thought this was going to be everything wrong with kids movies. And it honestly is not. It's just not for me. I would say the animation is actually pretty clever and dense at times. I think they're doing some cool stuff. I like the design of Whoville.
Yeah.
I like the transportation setup, how like the little kids are just like tobogganing like across the whole city. I liked the Looney Tunes-ness of the animation. Like that's something that you don't get in Pixar, which is loony animation.
Yes.
And Illumination, from what I've seen, is doing more of that fun out there, robust animation, which I do like. I don't want to get hit over the head, and that's why I've never really watched the Minions movies. That does feel like that. But I think because you're telling a holiday tale, you can let it breathe a little bit more because you need that awe of the holidays. So it's not going to be the whole time. Blah, 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 blah. I did think it was kind of funny and like very Grinchy when he goes to town and he's in like a grocery store and he like there's a woman going to pick up like a jar of something and he grabs it. He opens it, tries it, and he's like, oh, disgusting. He spits it back in the jar, he closes it, and then he puts it in someone else's shopping cart.
Yeah.
I thought that was just funny. Like, yeah. Like it's gross, it's funny, and like a good bit. Like, that's good Grinch stuff.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm not saying there's nothing here. I don't want to get across, because I thought there was, I agree with you, the animation is very, and I think that's one thing Illumination does well. I think the animation is smooth. It's pretty interestingly designed. I think I struggle a little bit with their storytelling because I've watched the Sing movies because my nephews are obsessed with them.
Have you tried to show them the trailer, though?
I mean, literally, they probably could. Although they did do a thriller version for Halloween. Ooh. And honestly, we all kind of got into it. We watched my littlest nephew, 2 years old, just dance into that. It was hysterical. He is doing all the moves that all the people were doing on the screen. That being said, I think where I've struggled, though, I'm like, I'm a story guy. I love something that's like, that's why, like I said, I pulled it back to Pixar. I'm like, one of the things that worked for me about the Jim Carrey movie is, right, it's all that backstory. And we get a little hint of that. But mostly it feels like we get a lot of like, look over here, look over here, look at this. Ooh, look at the dog's got a helicopter hat on now, right? Ooh.
That was pretty good. I was looking when they did that.
There's nothing wrong with the dog with a helicopter hat. That shit's funny. I get it.
Max has good bits.
Max is great bits. Max is a good boy. I have no issues with Max. He's great in every version of the Grinch.
And I feel like the Grinch when I'm at home with my dog and I'm just like walking around the house, like doing stuff and she's following me, like looking like, what's going on? on? Do you need help? What's going on? Like, just following me underfoot, like, the whole time.
Yeah. And, like, it's not like there's not heartfelt moments. I think it's great when, you know, Cindy Lou comes up and she's like, yep, we know you're a dick, but we're going to invite you to dinner anyway. And it's sort of like, isn't that just how we all ended up doing it with family at some point?
Yeah. And, I like that.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there's heart to it. I just kind of felt like, yeah, there's just a lot of, like, filler that I'm like, this movie could have legitimately probably been 20 to 30 minutes shorter, and it probably would have not been any different.
Yeah, and maybe it would have been nice, like a nice little 30-minute Illumination special.
Yeah, I mean, it could have really been that, but I get it too, and it made money. It made money. It had a modest budget of $75 million, which, like, for a computer animated movie,
I mean, you gotta back up that money truck to Cumberbatch.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically where it's going. But domestic made $272 million.
Wow.
Opening weekend, it almost made its entire budget back, $67 million. Gross worldwide was $540 million. So, I mean, this movie did well. Illumination's eaten whenever they drop something. Especially that Mario movie did gangbusters too. But it's an hour and 25 minutes. I think, yeah, it's fun. Kids can watch it. They're going to love it because it's got all the things that are going to keep them engaged. And it's nonstop action. Sometimes I like to let it breathe a little bit. I want to see the Grinch kind of stew, sit there on his perch. And
Yeah, I want to see him go through the alphabet and point out everyone he hates. That's funny.
Yeah.
I like to see him making prank calls.
Pretty great. Yeah.
And I always love the thing about the Grinch, how, like, he's also kind of like a brilliant engineer.
Yes.
In the, especially the later two versions, there's some of it in the animated, but I just love, like, the design in the animated and the live action of, like, his lair and how it's set up and how he's, like, slinging around all these different areas of this cave.
Well, you think about it too, and I think there is something to, and we can maybe talk a little bit about, and I'll talk about the other versions of the Grinch in a bit, but you're getting into, like, the, what am I trying to say? Like, the mindset of the Grinch, or, like, you know, his, like, persona. You know, there are so many things, and I remember talking with my wife Jasmine as we were watching that movie last night and just kind of breaking down the Grinch, like, thematically. It's like, you know, isn't the whole kind of motto of the story, like, you know, just because somebody might be grumpy doesn't mean they don't have a reason for it, right? It's like, you don't just kind of paint them as a grump because it's like, oh, that person sucks. It's like, what have they gone through? What's happened to them? What's gotten them to this point? Should we hold that against them, or should you still just, like, welcome them as part of society? You're kind of living in a society right now. I think we've painted a lot of people with broad strokes of, like, this person's an asshole because they did this or that. And it's like, what if we had a little bit of sympathy, or what if we had a little empathy for what people are going through? And it's like, I think the Grinch is an emblematic piece of that story of just, like, of America, of, like, you know, yeah, you kind of get so caught up in your own greed of your own holiday or whatever. You forget about people who may not have anybody or anything, you know? And it's like, and I think you do have somebody who seems like he has a lot to offer. He's an engineer. He's got a dog. He obviously cares for somebody, whether or not it's a living animal or whatever else. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with all that. I think you hit the nail on the head of the themes, that these are kind of, like, I think that's what I was kind of saying in the beginning, how, like, the themes of Christmas just sort of overlap with this story so well, or, like, what people kind of ascribe to Christmas.
Yeah. And it's like, and when does Christmas start becoming more about the material versus the the people you're with, right? And
sometimes Christmas is not about what comes from a store. Sometimes Christmas means a little bit more.
Ah. That's a very good Anthony Hopkins.
Thank you. I wrote it.
Did you?
No. Anthony Hopkins wrote it.
He wrote it.
Tony's like, I'm going to go off book.
I was trying to give you some credit, Fred, letting you catch everybody off guard. But I think it is, right? I mean, it's a great piece of the story that I think it's at its core. You recognize it because we all kind of see it. We all kind of get it, you know? And I mean, I think there are times where, you know, you do get caught up in, like, oh, what am I going to get for my family or whatever? And it's like, At the end of the day, it don't even fucking matter what you get them as long as you're there, right?
All the time you spend with each other.
Yeah, I know. And then coming up on the holidays here, or as we are in the holidays right now, hopefully have places to go and people to rely on. And hopefully you guys give a phone call if you...
And if you don't have a place to go this Christmas, Tom's going to drop his address at the end of this episode and just show up, make yourself
come on
home.
Over. Come on over. I got plenty of Coca-Cola products here. There is, but yeah, so there's something that's just, I think, running through each of these movies, and they each do it in a different way, which I think is why it's interesting that we made three different stories, right? That we have all the way back from the original book until the latest movie, which, yeah, I mean, at this point is now 6 years ago.
And wow.
I know. It was supposed to come out in 2017, but it got pushed back to 2018. Don't know why. I think they just maybe wanted to line up with, like, some of the release schedules a little bit better. But that was not the only three versions of the movie or the adaptations that we've seen. There is also several recordings and audiovisual adaptations of the book that have been published. In 1975... Zero Mostel narrated an LP record of the story. You know who Zero Mostel is?
Just from the producers, the OG producers.
That's right. He is Max Bialystock.
That's the only thing I know him from.
He's also plays Tevye in the movie version of Fiddler on the Roof.
Never seen.
I love me some Fiddler on the Roof.
I have to check it out.
Oi, Fred, you got to check out Fiddler.
I know when I was in New York, Harvey Fierstein was doing it.
Oh, my God.
That would have been cool.
Oh, I would have loved to watch Harvey on stage doing that.
I'd love to watch Harvey on stage doing anything.
He could just sell the hell out of it. David!
I just think of him in Independence Day.
Oh, crap. I got to call my mother. I got to call my lawyer. Oh, forget my lawyer. Very funny. He showed up in Cheers for that one episode, too.
I haven't gotten to that unless I, like, missed it. It's possible I could have missed it.
You're going to get a little of the Firestein coming.
What's his... Sandman showed up for, like, a one scener. Like, not famous yet. Thomas Everett... Is that known? What is his name? But you know what I'm talking about. He was in Twisted Metal. He's in Sideways.
Oh, Thomas Hayden Church?
Thomas Hayden Church.
Yes.
He showed up for like a one scene, but not as like, hey, look, everybody, it's Thomas Hayden Church. It was like, here's a young actor doing one scene.
Career. Yeah.
Yeah. But he had the juice.
Fun drop-ins. There's a couple others that are good too. We'll talk later once you're done with Cheers. Because there's some really good ones. The ones that you're even at the time like, I don't think this was as big of a deal then as it would have been now.
Well, I haven't been getting back into it as much because I'm trying to watch 2024 shows.
Ooh, maybe a little teaser for something to come.
Because I don't think I've watched many.
So we're talking a little bit about Fiddler on the Roof, but there was also a musical stage production of The Grinch done originally at the Old Globe Theater in San Diego back in 2007. Mm-hmm. It was then produced on Broadway and on a limited engagement U.S. tour in 2008. North American tour began in the fall of 2010 and has subsequently toured every fall since. I don't know if I've ever seen, though, The Grinch come to town. Or if I have it, it's just kind of gone over my head.
There was a filmed version that I tried watching, and it was upsetting.
Was this the 2020 live television adaptation?
Yes.
With Matthew Morrison?
Yes.
Yeah. How was that?
I didn't like it. It made me feel upset. I remember. That's all I remember from it. I watched a few minutes, and I said, no, thank you.
Is it just very, like, I don't know.
It's cringy. Like very on the nose Broadway, but like Grinch. He's like, I'm a Grinch.
I don't need any of that.
Look at me, Grinch.
I just want to hear the mean one, Mr. Grinch.
I just want to hear that Faith Hill song. Where are you, Christmas? Oh. How can I find you?
Man, I feel like that has not gotten as much play as it did back.
Oh, man, that was on the radio for a while.
Like, sure did.
That was going to be a Christmas classic, and then it kind of, you don't really hear it. Which I think the Faith Hill version, not the, where are you? Because there's like the little girl singing version. The Faith Hill version, I think, is a solid... not like dark, but like kind of emotional Christmas song. Yeah. You know?
Back when people would listen to the radio to see what's hot instead of just like, mm-hmm. Oh, this is my vibe on this station. I don't know. That's a very old way of thinking. A sequel titled How the Grinch Lost Christmas, was released on September 5th, 2023. This is a book that was published by Random House's Children's Books. The book was written by Alistair Haim and illustrated by Aristides Ruiz. I did not even know it existed.
No, I knew that there was stuff that happened after. I didn't know what format. I assumed animated thing or a book. So
book. Well, you'll probably see an animated version pop up from Illumination.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that could segue us maybe into our Show Me the Franchise segment.
Yes, indeed. I think that's a great timing for that.
Because that was something that I don't know if I wanted it from the Illumination version. But when I was watching the end of the movie, I remember in the theaters thinking, you know, that was, it's not bad. I'm kind of curious about the story of the Grinch integrated into Whoville after this. I think that is kind of an interesting story. You have this recluse who still has his picadillos.
Mm.
You know, he's still a kind of a little jerk in a way. He's got a better heart now, a warmer heart, but, you know, he's still going to be a little standoffish. So definitely. I think there is something there. What it is, I'm not sure.
I think that's just the question, though, right? It's like, what's the story you want to tell? And, like, how the Grinch lost Christmas. I'm like, okay, so you have a story there that makes back to Christmas, but what about just life outside of Christmas? What's he like every other day of the year?
I think it's like Santa puts him on the naughty list, and it's like the Who's are like, oh, we got to figure this out, and Santa's involved somehow.
Yeah, and they're just like, hey, have you believed in Easter? Have you accepted Easter in your life, Grinch? I could see that being a very, like, subtle thematic thing. But, or maybe it's just about, like, how do you become a better member of society every day of the year and not just giving at Christmas? Because that is the other thing I think a lot of people get.
Think locally, not globally, maybe. It's him kind of wanting to be so good and kind of struggling with that thing that I think a lot of us struggle with when we want to do good in the world. Is the good in the world that I'm doing enough? And is it making a difference?
And, yeah, and how you not burn yourself out trying to do good in the world and doing it in moderate ways that keep yourself up.
Yeah.
I like it, though. I think it would be interesting. There's a story there to be told. Because I think we've gotten the prequel story. So that's why I was almost like the Halloween one. I'm like, I don't know how interested I am unless it's like really establishing here's why the Grinch is so bitter, right? Mm-hmm. But, again, I think we've gotten two versions of the story now that kind of do a good job of painting like, yeah, he had a shitty childhood, like most people that suck when they become an adult, right. You know, like, because some parent or some people screwed them up when they were very young and impressionable and never told them different.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, there's probably a sequel to be made. I don't know, though. I don't know what else there would be that you could really do that has not been done.
What I would want, which isn't really a Grinch sequel, is I kind of want, like, the Gilmore Girls in Whoville. I just want, like, a show with low stakes that takes place in Whoville.
Would it be a version where Cindy Lou Who is, like, grown up?
Yeah, teenage Cindy Lou Who, like, Riverdale adjacent sort of deal.
Like a CW type show?
Yeah, but, like, I want that Gilmore Girls warmth, not the CW edge. I want, like, you know, not a lot's happening. There's a lot of warmth and cozy. So you ever watch any Gilmore Girls?
I have caught a little bit of it here and there.
I wouldn't throw it on for myself, but when Ashley was watching, I very much enjoyed the coziness of the Gilmore Girls. And I think a show like that kind of very, it's got the Great British Bake Off vibes, where it's kind of just that warming happiness and not a lot of stuff's going to happen, but we're here to have a good time.
Wholesome, would you say?
Yes, very wholesome. And I would love something like that. It doesn't have to be Grinch involving, just kind of like a Whoville.
So it's basically Riverdale, but Whoville.
Yeah, but Riverdale like is like a little more weird, like Twin Peaks wannabe.
See, now let's go the other way. Give me the Whoville that is more Twin Peaks, and I'm all on board that. And I'll be just like, show me how fucking weird the Dr. Seuss world.
Grinch, I told you to change your heart or die.
Instead, you grew it three times bigger. Bad Grinch.
This is excellent hot cocoa.
I just want to cast a whole like version though too of it. Who is even like the modern Kyle MacLachlan? Like, oh, you know who it is. I already got it.
Who?
It's Glenn Powell.
I was gonna say Glenn. I was literally had him in my mind, but I was like, is he too handsome, like good old boy, but he can give, like, I'm weird, and like in Hitman, like, yes. I feel I saw some of that. He can give you that. I gotta ask you, what kind of trees are up there on Mount Crumpet there?
I could see it. I could actually see it. Just like, damn fine. You know what? He would be a good, like, Cooper in, like, a, if they were casting Twin Peaks today.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking about that. Because, I feel like the boring thing is, like, anytime somebody's like, let's cast a movie, it's like, okay, if it's a white guy, we need Chalamet or we need Glenn Powell. Like, it just depends on which one. Mm-hmm. Do you want the small, sensitive guy who can play Bob Dylan, or do you want the big, kind of, like, muscle, like, handsome guy who can be, like, opposite Sidney Sweeney? Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Because, I don't know. It's just
Sidney Sweeney would be a pretty good Cindy Lou Who.
Oh, as an adult one?
Yes. No, it's a young one.
So, like, Grinch is like, whoa. Cindy Lou.
She looks like a who.
Not so little anymore. I'm doing like a Sean Connery. Yeah. Not so little
anymore. I'm the Grinch.
I'm the Grinch.
But he does do this voice. It's so hard. I can only do lines that he does in the
movies. Hush.
Yeah. Christmas. Like, he'll do even do that. Are you having a holly jolly Christmas? I hate them alphabetically.
From A to F. Wait, down to Z.
I must stop this Christmas from coming. But what will I wear?
Man, we missed out on having like an aged up Grinch played by Sean Connery.
Oh, that would have that been. Old Grinch?
Oh, man. He probably would have still won people's sexy
with like on. A shotgun. Like,
with his shirt
on. You better move off my mountain.
It's like they're like trying to figure out like, hey, how come the Grinch has like just like regular like chest hair?
How come the Grinch is drinking straight vodka all the time?
I had like, there's like some crazy ass story about Sean Connery that like he like handed his coat to somebody and like took on two guys in a bar fight and just took them out. Like,
I believe it. He's known to hit people, including his spouses.
Yeah. I mean, who isn't a shitty guy from like back in the day? No, that's the worst thing. Anyway, though, but yes. So
we'll never talk about him again.
Yes. Nope. Never Sean Connor. Might be coming up. But it is part of a bigger picture in that regard. There is, though, a thing that I was thinking about with one more thing maybe to dream on for the Grinch if we wanted to. Because I liked your idea of a spinoff, too, and I really, really enjoyed that. But I would almost want to see something that was more, I don't even know, like, could you make some kind of animated series off of that maybe is just more like I don't know, maybe it is a little more kid friendly and not so like Gilmore Girls.
Are we bringing back like a Chuck Jones aesthetic? Are you picturing that or something modern?
Maybe something that is a little bit, yeah, like kind of like Looney Tunes vibe of like, could it be more, it's like I was trying to go like try to iterate and be like, is there more like Grinch on different holidays or whatever throughout the year? But I'm like, what if it's just different Seuss characters? But then it's just like, why don't you just make a Dr. Seuss like anthology series of that's animated? Yeah.
I must stop this Labor Day from coming. But what will I wear? Not white. No, I will wear white. That will show them.
I'm glad you have all these quotes like on the top of your dome.
Like I said, that's probably like for a while one of my most watched movies. Like I was being such a Christmas guy and being such a Jim Carrey guy, it was kind of like, how could you ask for more?
It would be fun to see Jim Carrey put the makeup on again, but I know he'd never.
No, I don't think so.
Never, ever, ever. He would be like, I need some kind of CGI solution, or I'm not doing it.
Yeah, like, and which no one wants like to see. Yeah.
So I think we kind of covered it there, and I think that gets us to the power rankings this day, Fred. We're going to do the top three characters in The Grinch, which you might be asking at home. There's more than two characters or three characters?
Oh, get out of here.
There's a couple other characters. Fred, why don't you kick us off? Because I know you're dying to talk about one.
So I'll start with that. My number three pick, I'm going to go with... From the Illumination, I'm going to go with the Grinch's neighbor character played by Kenan Thompson. I think he's legit really funny in the animated Grinch. I think his whole bit is that he thinks the Grinch is his friend, and he's kind of just oblivious that the Grinch is a jerk and is trying to avoid him. And I love that he calls him Mr. Grinch the whole time. Mr. Grinch!
Mr. Grinch!
I think that's like the only seriously comedic part of that whole thing, other than when he spits in the jar. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
And Max has some good bits. My number two, another great guy. I'm going to give it to the mayor character, Jeffrey Tambor in the Grinch, because I think that is a really funny. That was just like seeing a villain who was buffoonish. I just really liked that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And then number one, I'm going to go Jim Carrey Grinch.
Oh.
Just going to lay it in there.
I mean, it's interesting you picked like the specific performances, though, too, of what you got.
He gives me a little more to play with.
Maybe that's how we should be approaching
this. And then the MVP is Max, of course.
I mean, Max is, he's an easy number one. I'll just call that.
Nice. I like it.
Max is my number one. I mean, I'm always a fan of the Karloff Grinch, but it's hard not to go Jim Carrey Grinch, though. But I will say, I do think the little girl in the Jim Carrey one did a very good. What's her name? Taylor Momsen? Something like that.
That sounds right. And she's very, very adorable and seems very committed to Christmas.
Yes. I thought she was very good. But I mean, Max is, he's the real MVP. Mm-hmm. I also, I did enjoy the, or were they like the elk or whatever? the illumination.
Yeah, version? And the goat yelled. That was funny.
The goat yelling. I mean, I know they're playing on that joke. Listen, it was a good bit.
The giant big old reindeer was pretty funny too.
That's the one I'm thinking. Yeah. What was the? Yeah, not an elk. Why did I call it? I think I did the same thing last night too. I'm like,
you got elk on the brain.
I got must be elk on the brain. It was what is that elk's name? Or God, reindeer. What is the reindeer's name?
Is it like just a normal name and that's why it's funny? Is he like Greg the reindeer or something?
Yeah, it's something like that, or Herman or
Samuel
or some bullshit.
Come here, Herman. I am the Grinch.
Fred?
Could be Fred. I think it might be Fred.
I think it might be too. You're like, you reacted like yes. Oh boy, fun times. That gets us to the end of our episode, though, Fred. And what a wonderful holiday time it is. Anything that you would like to plug at this moment?
No, just keep listening to the podcast. We're giving you some nice free episodes. They come without ribbons. They come without bags. They come without packages, boxes, or tags. And they're free for you to listen. Check out the Cheers episode. I think it's a good one. That's our first one back. And have a great holiday.
Thanks, Fred. That is a great message. Have a great holiday, everybody. I'll just do some wrap up here for our episode.
Like a gift.
I'm going to wrap it up like a gift. That's right. I actually wrote a script for this now. I announced that on some other episodes too, but if you enjoyed what you listened to today, please remember to rate and review this episode. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, X/Twitter, for now, and YouTube. Join our Patreon for just $1 a month. You get exclusive content every single month. We'll be dropping a new episode. This month, you can listen all about our holiday food draft. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Just in time for the holidays here. It's ready there for you. You can sign up today. Special thanks then to Nick Spitz and Mike Schwantz. Have not given them enough love for doing our opening and closing themes. No episode is complete without you guys, so thank you very much for that. And stay tuned for our next main feed episode, which is
Coca-Cola.
That's right.
A taste of a new generation.
Yeah, I wanted to hold it off. We did do Coca-Cola. It's going to be the next episode. So check that out, and we'll see y'all then.
Bye.
Happy God, no cares, it's all I want to do is charge my phone and drive listening to you. And what they talk to you about will